members to for our meeting, and all of us know that in terms of money bills amendment procedure act, it is required that the minister table the MTBPS before parliament and allow the process over 3 months of evaluation of the budget, the main budget, and the minister has tabled the revised fiscal framework for the current financial year and proposed fiscal framework for the next 3 years. Also, the government spending priorities as proposed, division of revenue and the division of revenue amendment bill and adjustment appropriation bill. So the purpose of our meeting ideally is to receive a briefing as well as the opportunity for us as members of the committee to raise questions, to clarify ourselves in the proposals contained in this documentation. And National Academy is here for that purpose to lead us in the presentations. And further, the process requires that we have public hearings with relevant stakeholders to solicit their views and make submissions really on these areas. So we normally, on the side of the NCOP, also do invite permanent delegates to join in this process. And I also want to acknowledge the presence of both the chair of the Eastern Cape Finance Committee and the Northwest chairperson of the Finance Committee who have joined us in this meeting. And thanks very much. Let me indicate apologies. A chair of the Standing Committee is not with us today, Honorable Mashadile, because of other engagements. And two members of the Standing Committee, Dr. Matlopa and Natasha Rowe, are not here. Receive apologies. And of course, other members will join. And from the NCOP side, we have Mrs. Van Lingen and Mr. Gaila, who are not here. So, our honorable members have indicated that they will join the meeting because of delayed transport and so on. And let me welcome also the FSC, ICFSC, King James, Mr. Kumar, and Professor Frankie Sake. Most welcome. I'll give to the EDG of Treasury, MDG, or just before that, Dr. Fick has indicated that he wants to make a submission on the agenda. All members have the agenda. Okay. Can we get a coffee?
Thank you, Chairperson. Do you like to request an addition to the agenda to make a submission? Thank you.
You would like to make, what do you propose, Dr.
Because we'd like to make an addition to the agenda regarding the budget. So we'd like to include an item after 3 where I will then enable my submission.
Okay, what do we call it? That item.
We can call submission by the day on the budget.
Will it not arise out of issues presented by Treasury? That interest will give you an opportunity to discuss issues on what, because if it arises out of presentation, so you have an opportunity to can raise your views there.
Chair, sorry, I don't want to be specific at this point in time, because then obviously it's going to be made aware of it. It's not going to arise, it's a new issue, so it's not going to arise out of the presentation by the budgetary. So I'm just requesting that you just add the item, which will be an item, we can call it a discussion on the budget. But it's an item which is submission by the Democratic Alliance. Thank you.
Honourable members, that the proposal, Dr. Fick, I don't know what your take on it, the item on the budget. Yes, three of us.
No, Chair, it would be helpful to know what, because we are discussing the budget, it would be helpful to know what is the specific item on the budget that is, however, outside the scope of what we are discussing, as presented by the Minister 2 days ago and in the National Assembly, and as discussed yesterday and today. What is this item that is outside the scope that must now come in? It be helpful to understand what that is. Before we can accept the item.
Thanks. Honorable Kawaza. I'll do so. Answer the question. We'd like to propose an amendment to the budget.
Amendment to the budget. Is it relevant to the procedure process?
What I'm requesting with respect is to add to the agenda. We have an agenda, so I'm just requesting that before we finalize the agenda, that we just add an item. And I can now specifically state that the item that we are wanting to add is to propose an amendment to the budget. Thank you.
Okay. Let me give members honorable chair. And we get honorable clause.
Yes, chairperson, the budget, we refer to the national budget to be tabled in February. We currently deal with the appropriations to the current budget. So there must not be specifics. What are we actually referring to? The 2016-17 budget or the adjustments to the appropriations?
Well,
as we're going to deal with it in this meeting, and the division of revenue amendment bills, and then I have public hearings going to provinces. Again, I have public hearings come back to go through the process until 24th of November.
Chairperson, I think that what we're dealing with now is I think further clarification on issues that are arising out of the minister's announcement of the MTPPS. The issue of amending the budget should come as parliament committees grapple with the issues here, so that we can then make a firm submission to parliament at the point when that arises, when this goes to parliament for a debate for amendments. So I think it would be premature to discuss amendments at this point.
Thanks, Honorable Kawaza. Mr. Honorable Chair, you wanted to read something?
Honorable Chair, yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Honorable Chair, we are in committee. This is the Committee of Appropriations together with the Standing Committee of Appropriations joint meeting. The request is just a very simple one to an item to be added onto the agenda so it can be deliberated. That is all. It's not necessarily implying that the item will be accepted or approved by the committee or carried. No, it's just a submission because it is the correct forum to do this. And after the submission, if there's any deliberations, there will be deliberations. And then the issue can be decided upon whether it's acceptable or not acceptable. But it doesn't necessarily mean that if the item is submitted, it carries, it's just for information and it's a submission as such. And this is the best and correct forum to do it. Because after all, it is the Select Committee and Standing Committee of Appropriations joint meeting. And it is pertinent to the 2015-2016 budget adjustment. So that's all my colleague is requesting. It's nothing out of the ordinary. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. I know you, Chair. I think you want to raise anything? Okay, thanks.
Yeah, no, I'm covered by what my colleague has raised.
The chair, can I hear what?
Thank you, Chair. I'm Saxo Kumaro from Gauteng, Chair. My understanding is that here we're dealing with the principles. And our committees, control committees, will be dealing with the details. I don't think that here is a mistake that we can be able to approve it. I don't think we're actually the right structure is that. They will propose that you. I don't agree with the thing of that I changed the body in this case. But I think I'm thinking the car. Let's wait for another process.
I'm sorry not to cause confusion, but clearly there's a misunderstanding of what I'm wanting to raise. Well, at this point in time, nobody knows what I'm wanting to raise, but broadly, all I'm asking for is a request to add one item to the agenda. So why is it becoming now an issue of what details that I'm going to raise without anybody knowing the detail? All I'm saying is that I'm wanting to, we are discussing the Justice Amendment Bill today. So my request is to add an item, and Honorable Guavaza wanted to know what the item is. So now that he knows the item, he wants to not disagree with me. All I'm saying is that I would like to add an item to which concerns the 2015 Adjustment Appropriations Bill, which is relevant to this meeting. Thank you.
I think, Honorable Members, I've had the proposals and I've had the views of members. It's only fair to divide this matter to the public hearings where stakeholders' views will be solicited, will discuss concrete amendment submissions to the budget. So rather, let's agree that we'll process this difficult fashion where it will be discussed in the second session of our deliberations in the public hearings. And let's allow Treasury and efficiently deal with the issues that have been presented today. It's only fair in that way because the budget is presented and the committee must verify itself the contents of the budget so that we do not cause confusion in terms of just hearing a presentation of the amendment of the budget without the. I think it's fair that we hear Treasury and present the budget. So I would rule that we refer the matter to the public hearing session. Thanks. Can we have Treasury to present? So can you minute then, can you minute that the request for an addition to the agenda has been declined?
Yes, it is referred to other processes as well unfold. The purpose of the meeting is quite clear. We have to clarify ourselves with the budget. PDG, shall we proceed please so that we don't engage in this? What is it?
Honourable Chair, let's just place the record. The SA is represented by the here in Parliament. As stakeholders, it is our duty at the end of the day to make a submission if we so need to. This is the correct forum for us to make that submission. We go to public hearings, that is part of the process, acceptable. But this is a committee. And we have the right to make a submission to the committee. I don't understand, with due respect, sir, what is so ridiculous or out of the ordinary to make and to add an item on the agenda to hear the submission. Not necessarily that it will be accepted or approved upon, but this is the correct forum. This is a committee. I mean,
okay, thanks.
We ask you to be and in the best interest of the country, we ask you to be reasonable to accept our request.
You have made a point, and I give the two members chair, can you speak, and then Honorable Babaza concludes. I made a ruling on this matter, so please.
Thank you, Chair, and pardon my ignorance. In the first instance, when you started this meeting, you asked if all members have got copies of the agenda. I don't, I meant to wear spectacles, but I have seen what agenda stands like. And I have not seen in an agenda an item called adoption of agenda. That is the first thing. But secondly, the purpose of this meeting, which is known to all members, is simply for both committees to clarify themselves on what the minister is actually presenting, what actually ends in the budget. And thirdly, this is not the end of the process. It's just the beginning and a process where you then clarify there will be opportunities as far as I'm concerned for all interested parties, be they representative of political parties or stakeholders, would have an opportunity fairly so to raise any other matter. And therefore, my last point is that the chair has ruled on the matter and in terms of how we are proceed forward. And I'm not sure why is it that we continue in this meeting to be discussing these other matters that are open air. And I therefore suggest the court that the chairman stick to the ruling and we proceed to the meeting. Our interest is to clarify ourselves on the budget, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Elisha. You want to comment?
Chairperson, I accept your ruling. I just wanted to clarify that when I asked for the specific, I thought that the issue being raised is totally outside the scope of this whole process leading to the announcement of the budget in February. And it is not, it is within. So, but I think that the item is a bit misplaced. And that's why I say I respect your ruling, and therefore we must proceed. What else? The item is not rejected. What we are saying, it's not proper for it to be discussed, to be carefully discussed at this point.
Finally, Chair. I agree fully with you, but I don't want us to go further than that.
Okay.
If we agree on the principle that clearly we deal with this matter, to be able to say it's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So let's proceed. Let's invite the two leaders to the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. I will start first by introducing the team. Next to me is Dr. Jay Brown, who is the Chief Director responsible for financial planning in the Budget Office, National Treasury. On my left is Mr. Jan Happing, who is responsible for the government budget in the intergovernmental relations in the National Treasury. And across there is Mr. Stephen Kenyon, who is acting Chief Director Policy, acting on Wendy, that I think you know very well, because she's also sick at the moment. So this is the team that we are with to present to you the details of the two appropriation adjustment bills that were tabled by the Minister on the press. The next slide. So I would allow Dr. K. Brown to take you through the adjustment appropriation bill the amendment, which is basically amendments to the national budget. Then I will take you through the 2015 Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, which essentially amends allocations to provinces and local government.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair. I'm going to take you quite quickly through the adjustments budget. I think one of the key things, I think the point has been made, but just to state the obvious, that this is not the three-year rolling NSF budget, but merely adjustments to the in-year budget. And as such then, there are specific legal requirements in terms of which one can make such technical adjustments. Those are on the slide on the screen. I won't go through them all right now because we will look at some of them in detail again. So basically, to discuss the adjustments appropriation bill, which I'm sure you all have, this bill just shows one the amendments to budget items that were tabled at some of the main budget. These are tabled per vote and per program within a vote. Sometimes the particular items are also under a specific heading, which shows one the type of expenditure. And then obviously we also show it by different economic classifications, so current expenditure transfers and so on. Any items that are indicated with an asterisk are specifically and exclusively appropriated, which means if departments do not want to spend the money on that item, they need to seek Parliament's approval to change any funding from there. And all conditional grants, which you will see in the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, all of those are also specifically and exclusively earmarked at the National Transferring Department. So essentially, if you look in the adjustment estimates of expenditure, you would get the detail of these adjustments, but you'd also get a mid-year report on the status of spending per department and per program, and the status of the key performance areas. So the aim is obviously that all these appropriations are done in accordance and executed in terms of the PFMA and even this legislation or requirement in the Dora Amendment Bill, but also it serves as some information for oversight. We can move on, Stephen.
Thank you.
Okay.
Reading questioning. I think we can just go item by item. So, firstly, there, the first category, there we have the provisions for the new wage agreement, essentially the full amount of the contingency reserve, which is the $5 billion, was allocated for this. Clearly, this is not the full cost of the new agreement, but the department will make other adjustments in order to come with a budget. Broadly speaking, you can see the detail there. You can see that the province has got $3.8 billion of that, and national departments about 1.2. Then the unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure category. This is quite a strict criterion because it does mean that whatever has cropped up was completely unavoidable and unforeseeable at the time of the budget, else provision should have been made. So we only have two items there, and that is because of the depreciation of the rand and the effect that it had on the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. And then also we have for Danelle, call on one of the guarantees relating to the Airbus military aircraft contract. Again, these are unforeseen in the sense that we do not know when such claims will arise, and obviously they can only be submitted after they have checked on their side as well, if they are in agreement. Then announced by the Minister at the time of the budget in this category, essentially at the time of the main budget, we may not be sure of exactly what the details are, but we know that there's a looming issue and some revision would have been made in the cases for the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project in Gauteng, the details. Then the shift of funds between boats because of function shifts. I'm probably not going to go through all of them there. You can have a quick look. Generally speaking, these are not large amounts of money. The largest is the bottom one, and that is about $92 million. That's for people that are placed overseas. Then for violence, this is shifting of funds between different programs. You can also see the detail there. On your left-hand side, you'll see where the fund has been taken from, and on your right-hand side, you'll see for what purpose. And essentially, we're showing those that are over $100 million. Generally speaking, they do not tend to amount to that much. But obviously the details are also in the adjusted estimates of national expenditure. You do have those tables. Can we move on, Stephen? Okay. Rollovers. I think the key thing to point out here is rollovers are funds that were not spent in the previous financial year, but for which there are commitments to spend. So in other words, there could be an invoice, it just could have been that it was invoiced late, or there's already been given, approval has already been given for the order that just did not come in time and that sort of thing. The biggest item here is the local government equitable share amount in respect of the municipalities that had to make arrangements in terms of their payment of Eskom and Water Board accounts. And then the others are fairly small. They only amount to about $118 million. Many of them still relate to some of the macro organization and the shifting of functions between departments with the setting up of new departments that happened last year. Self-financing expenditure. This is expenditure that is funded out of revenue that is raised directly by related activities. So just for example, for Home Affairs, the fees that are charged for the issuance of the official documentation are then given to Home Affairs in order to pay for the production of the document. Declared unspent funds. There's quite a long set of lists here, chose it all, but essentially the each individual amount is not big. Essentially what this is where departments have told us that they do not have the capacity to spend the funds for this year. They're not making any commentary on their plans going forward, but for this year they would not spend these amounts. Obviously, given that we are running a country deficit, we would then be borrowing this money and paying interest on it to make it available. So obviously it is prudent if they are saying to us that they're not going to spend it to actually reduce the appropriations accordingly. Okay. Then essentially we have the summary slide, which just tells us where that leaves us in general. All the various items are reflected there. What you can see in the first column is basically what was tabled at the time of the main budget, the main appropriation. Then you can see the adjustments, and in the end you can see the effect of those adjustments in the adjusted appropriation. And essentially we are thinking that in terms of our projections that the spending will be slightly less on those items that we had in the appropriation bill, the main appropriation bill. The spending will be slightly less than that once we have adjusted for these items. Essentially that also then just provides the summary. I want to have a quick look just to get a sense of the magnitude of the numbers, but that is offset then obviously by the contingency reserve, declared unspent funds, as well as projected underspending. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll take you through the adjustments that are made to the bill based on the changes in the fiscal framework that impacts on provinces and local government. This is done in terms of Section 12.4 of Money Bill Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. So there are basically two clauses that are changing in a way in the bill. The first one relates to the actual adjustment to schedules of the bill. Schedules 1, 2, to 6, which, as you will see in the next slide, we are substituting what would, on top there in the table, was the original allocation in the appropriation for the current year. And in the bottom, we are showing that allocation in the first column, but we are also showing an adjustment in the second subcolumn of A, and then the total. So the table below reflects what table A adjusted bill looks like. So next slide. So what we are reflecting here is the allocation of the additions that have been made to equitable share of the provinces to compensate for increased personnel costs as a result of the wage agreement that was significantly higher than what was budgeted for. So the funds are distributed among the provinces primarily based on the shortfalls in the compensation budget, so that those with higher personal costs are getting more. And this is directly more to compensate for departments like education and health that are more personal intensive in the provinces. However, this is not actually addressing all the shortfall that the provinces face. The provinces still have to reprioritize within their budgets the tune of about $4 billion in order to make up for the total shortfall as a result of wage increases. So in terms of conditional grants adjustments, there is a shift to add 100 million to human settlement development grant. This essentially is added to the Eastern Cape directly towards Nelson Mandela Bay to accelerate housing delivery in that province, given the rate at which the province is performing overall on their grant. The second one is about conversions that are being made from indirect conditional grants to direct conditional grants. As members will know, A number of grants have got both an element of direct grants, which means the money is flowing directly to the province or local government to be spent on that purpose within the department or municipality. Or for the same purpose, the money becomes an indirect grant, which means the national department spends on behalf of the province or the department. So the act allows for the shifts between the two grants to allow for performance. If the province or municipality performs, the money will be shifted to the municipality. If the national department performs, the money will shift it likewise. So in this case, 193 million from national health grants is shifted to health facility revitalization grants, which will be spent on the revitalization program by Free State and Limpopo, which are spending at much higher rate. 7.7 million is a shift from national health grants to national health insurance grants for Western Cape to directly implement the plan of NHI. So the second part is about the allocations, or is about reductions due to projected underspending. So again, this is reductions from the health facility revitalization component of the indirect national health grant that has been reduced by 62.5 million. Of that, 44.9 million is shifted towards the department's vote, the National Health Department vote, in order to spend on the South African Demographic and Health Survey, and also on the Forensic Chemist Laboratories and the Medicine Control Council. The 7.4 million is reduced from HIV/AIDS life skill grant due to anticipated other spending. So this slide reflects the adjustments that have been made to the tune of around 510 million from the various conditional grants in the provinces to offset the amounts that were transferred in 2014 but were not spent and were not paid back to the revenue fund. So whenever there's underspending and the rollover of that underspending is not approved, the province or local governments have to pay back the money to the revenue fund. So Section 22 of the DORA allows the National Treasury to offset this amount against the future allocations. So in this case, we are offsetting them against the current year's allocations. So the idea here is that they still have that money in their bank. If they want to bring it and make up for that allocations that are being offset, they can do that. But they won't have to pay the money into the revenue fund. Next, this slide reflects adjustments to the local government equitable share. This members, as you remember, last year we did withhold some 2.1 billion from some municipalities that were having huge outstanding bills, particularly with regards to Eskom and water boards, which are the most single entities that the municipalities hold. So now 1.5 billion has to be rolled over because that's the amount that would be spent or would be released in the current year. So the deal was that as municipalities enter into agreements to pay back and have payment plans to settle the debts, then the money would be released. So almost all the municipalities have met that condition of entering into what we consider to be affordable plans, because those were negotiated with the entities. So the funding has been released. So this has got to be rolled over in order to make up for that. So we also want to add that we are also working with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation to ensure that provinces also and local and national governments also settle their debts to owed to municipalities. So in terms of adjustments to conditional grants for local government, we have got a reduction that due to projected underspending. So this is 64 million that has been reduced from the indirect regional bulk infrastructure grant. and 200 million that has been reduced from municipal infrastructure grant. As you know, it also has an element of indirect and direct. So that means both municipalities and national governments do not have capacity to spend all the allocations. So that is part of the money that is also in a way declared as to be understand. So both of these grants were easily understand in the last year. There is an improved performance in the current year, but it's still very clear that they won't be able to spend all the money as they have indicated. There have been shifts between the projects, between municipalities. That also are reflected in the adjustment schedules. That reflects adjustments that have been made between municipalities, between projects, where there is faster spending. So there is also a 339 million that has been reprioritized from regional bulk, particularly to support the bulk required for budget evacuation program. This is primarily, I believe, in the free state. So, yes. So the next, almost the last slide is the annexures to the bill. So we are also required, together with the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, to also submit any proposed changes to the Gazetteer's Container Grants Framework allocation. So Section 62 of the Division of Revenue Act requires that we consult Treasury, we consult Parliament on any proposed changes to the Conditional Grant Framework, whether to correct any error or any to correct any omissions. So Parliament is now asked to consider and approve corrections to the framework of the National Health Grant, specifically the Health Facility Revitalization Component. So this annexes to this grant include the details of what we want to be able to amend in terms of each one of the grants. So in terms of the correction that we want to make to the conditional grants framework, this relates to health facility revitalization component of grant, as we have indicated. The national health grant is used to pilot national health insurance interventions, which are aimed at improving health facilities in preparation for the rollout of NHI. So as part of this, the department has been piloting an integrated patient-based information system in the primary health facilities in the 10 pilot districts. So this is said to have worked very well. So the department wants to roll out this to non-HI pilot sites. And this is not accommodated for in the framework. So now the framework corrects this omission. It allows, therefore, the department to use, to expand this integrated patient-based information system to other primary healthcare facilities outside of the pilot in other districts. But we are restricting this amount to 50 million. So we'll also select this in terms of the outcomes and outputs of the grants in the framework. The adjustment will also be reflected in that. So I think this is all we have in terms of the details of the adjustments of the appropriating bill and Division of Revenue Act.
Thanks very much, DDG, and all your team for the presentations on both adjustment appropriation and the Division of Revenue bills. So, honourable members, can we start the discussions on the two bills? I know the answers. They are all honourable members in this line. Honourable Shah.
Sir, President Young. Thank you to the Treasury for doing this hard work to do analysis and to get us on board as committees. Chairperson, three things. I want to request that the Treasury, together with the Department of Higher Education, go and explore scenarios to address the allocations made to institutions of higher education, seeing what happened past 3-4 days, and come back and put that forward to the should you call it, by the chair. And we can contemplate about that, that we call a meeting of the two appropriations committees as well as the two committees, one in the National Assembly and the other in the National Council of Provinces on higher education to address the situation that is now currently running outside, because the world is watching us. What's Parliament going to do? What did Parliament do in 2010 when the submissions was made to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education? Well, it comes back to us. Our responsibility in this institution. Our responsibility, chairperson, to visit schools, clinics, universities, FET colleges, you name it. ECD centers, grade R classes. Are these institutions equipped to do what is expected of them? So I leave that chair. Secondly, looking at the amendments to the Division of Revenue, chairperson, all these figures in brackets implicates a reduction to be taken away. Just looking at page 18, Community Library Services Grant, Northern Cape, minus 1.5 million rand. This is a serious matter, Chair, because a library is connected to a school. That's where the learners go and do their assignments. Libraries must be a facility of excellence to assist the learner or the student, what the case may be. Also, with regard to health, chairperson, my proposal is that on a quarterly basis, the provincial departments, in terms of the National Treasury's report, and that report is available, I think, on a monthly basis, the spending of the grants referring to this, what we see here on page 17 going on. Because that's a concern. When the Northern Cape, my province, is a very, very rural province, must give back 1.5. That's unspent. Might be a small amount. But in my constituency, I've got 15 libraries on the chairperson, but battling to get them on a specific level that's acceptable. Because it's steel containers. It's not a brick building with air conditioners. That's why I'm very touched about this. Yes. Thank you, Chair. That is my submission. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable TPM. Honorable Fick. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm speaking for your children and for my children. This is the committee that has the power to make any changes. We heard that last week at our strategic planning meeting that the Appropriations Committee has the power to change the budget. It's a power, and those members of today will remember that it's a power that we have but we're not using. And I believe that it's time that we need to make use of that power that we have to amend the budget for the right reasons. There's a crisis in higher education. It's clear. We need to work together to fix this crisis. So, and without being personal, I get disturbed when you get objection just because you want to raise a matter to help the children out there. So, we would like this committee to assist us in amending the Adjustment Appropriations Budget 2015. It's an urgent matter. We cannot wait until next year, the 2016 budget. It has to be addressed in this budget, which is finalized in the next 2 weeks. So, I believe what we should do then, Honorable Chairperson, is to call in the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education
to come and brief the committee on the shortfall in higher education, because clearly there is. Because this is a first time that it might happen, where an appropriation committee might change the budget, we need some legal advice. So we would also like, I believe we should request a parliamentary legal advisor to advise us on the process that we should engage in to amend the legislation. And in order to determine, because it would be unacceptable just to say help higher education. So we should get the budget office, parliamentary budget office, to assist in doing an analysis on the exact amount of the shortfall in order to determine what amount can be transferred or reallocated in this adjustment, appropriations adjustment budget, so that we can solve the crisis in our education. Chairperson, on that, I would like to table for the record, so if we have it in a minute, I'd like to table a bit. Thank you.
Honorable Fik, thank you for your comments. You do agree with Honorable Charles Dibier that the matter of higher education requires attention by this committee, and that a couple of things need to be explored by the Committee of Appropriations in order to go much deeper in dealing with these issues. So I'd like to hear other members if they want to comment further on who want to comment? Is that better of yours? Is that area submission that you wanted to do? Or a different one now?
Okay. It's a different one.
Submission based on what I'm just talking about now.
Okay.
It's issues that we have talked on. Okay. Thanks. Can we have members commenting on the issues? You are welcome if you want to, just if you want to deal on this issue, because it's a topical issue on education. It's current, it's matter, it's agent, which already expressing things. Oh, Honorable Chair, I want to, do I pronounce your name right when I say Honorable Tata? Okay, then. All right.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I wish to just support to what Honorable Tizier raised on the issue of higher education. But I think a related point to that, which Treasury suggests that they must take note of, is to ensure value for money. It's important that the issues of the content of higher education, as it relates to the general goals of the country, as contained in the NGP, the issue of curriculum, it's quite important that it's linked to the whole issue of how we're funding higher education, so that that which we produce in this institution is able to meet the development goals of the country. I think that the issue of money cannot be discussed separately outside the content of what is produced in higher education. That's my first point. My second question to Treasury is whether, as it relates to issues of rollovers, because I know a case, which I'm willing to share with them, where rollovers are approved by Treasury in the province, but declined by National. Whether does it mean that those rollovers fall in the category you mentioned, where there has been issues of under expenditure? So I just want to get, at what instances. Is it in the same situation where rollovers, even if approved by national, by provincial treasury, they can decline? Fine, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Any further comments? Okay. Honorable McLaren and Honorable Isaac, and then Honorable Jobe. Honorable Jobe.
Chairperson, I would like you to remember my name properly.
because it's the fourth time you make that mistake, and it's unacceptable. Sharp as you got a thing.
Thank you, Chairperson. For the record, my surname is McLaughlin. Thank you, sir.
Okay, honorable member. Okay, thanks, McLaughlin.
I'd just like to address the issue that is uppermost in our minds, first off. And I'd like to emphasize what my colleague raised about the aspect that it is urgent. It's not a sudden thing, it's all of a sudden happened. When we were given a presentation by the Department of Higher Education towards the end of last year, we were informed that just in NSFAS grant system alone, since its inception, 20 billion rand had been misappropriated, been handed out to wrongful claimants. If that had been applied correctly, we wouldn't have the problem we have now. Well, it certainly wouldn't have as much of a problem as we have now. So it's not that this is a new thing, it's something that's been there for a long time. And we failed to address it. This government has failed to address that problem. We need to address it now, and we need to address it urgently and very importantly, because it's not going away. And I just want to stress that point, that this must happen soon. On the 20th of November, we finalise this current adjustments budget, and it needs to happen before that date. Just moving on to the presentation, and if I can refer to slide 8. In last year's adjustments budget, this very same item appeared. Hence, claims submitted by Danel Aerostructure for damages and losses in terms of the indemnity provided by government. And in that instance, it was the 9th claim. I asked the question of the minister as to what this is about. It was the contract that was cancelled between Danel and the manufacturers of Airbus aircraft contained a clause that all the money that we had paid to Airbus at that stage would be refunded, and it was refunded to Danel. I wanted to know what this indemnity is, what it's about, what it covers. I have not yet had a reply from the minister, and here the item appears again under the heading unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure. It's certainly not unforeseeable. We saw it last year. Now we're seeing it again. So I want an explanation of this. Why is it here again, and what is this money for? We give no explanation, and I get suspicious when these sort of things happen. I had a number of other items that I wanted to ask about. I'll just carry on to slide 25. This is now under the Division of Revenue Bill. We're saying all of a sudden here the 100 million rand is added to accelerate housing delivery in Nelson Mandela Bay. Why now? This position has been the case since 1994. There's been a housing problem in Nelson Mandela Bay. If I look at Table 2 of the adjusted estimates, I notice we're taking away 700 million rand from the Department of Water and Sanitation. And some of that, I guess, is going towards this 100 million for housing in Nelson Mandela Bay. Those houses won't be worth anything to anybody if there's no water supply there. The Department of Water is the worst performing department in this government. So what do we do about that? We take their money away from them. They'll help them. What is going on, sir? Why is it that we are doing things like this? This is one of the most important aspects. It's a constitutional mandate. The poor people of this country need water. You cannot have life without water. It's essential. And yet you do nothing to fix the problem. It carries on from one year to the next where the Department of Water just does not perform. And now we take their money away and give it to other people, hoping that they will perform. But the problem with water doesn't go away. The people out there are still struggling with water. I read a report this morning where there's one tap for 10,000 people. This is unacceptable in this democracy. It is absolutely unacceptable. It is horrendous that one tap must serve 10,000 people. And yet we're taking the money away. We're disempowering them. It can't be right. Surely Treasury must be able to see these kind of things and allocate money more effectively than now suddenly deciding, well, Nelson Mandela Bay is a good idea because we're about to lose that to the DA, so let's pump all the money in there quickly. It can't be right. That's not how we're supposed to run a country, sir. which is supposed to address the need, not the political ideals. Next one, 7.7 million from national health. This will allow the Western care government to implement an HI pilot project. Why is it moving from a national department to a provincial department and one province only? I don't understand the rationale behind that. Just a thought I had. The next slide, slide 26, the adjustment to provincial conditional plots. Now, I notice that this addresses the issue of set-offs, of rollover amounts against new payments that are going out. I just wanted to ask, is the interest factor taken into account here in any way? Because obviously the funds have been paid over to whatever institution it might be, are sitting in a bank somewhere, presumably earning interest. Is that interest taken into account when the set-off is done? Or does the interest just fall off the table somewhere and vanish and somebody grabs it and runs with it? I'm not sure. It's not addressed here, and it was just a concern I had that somehow there's a leak. Slide 27. Is National Treasury able to tell us, with any degree of accuracy, how much money is actually owed by national government to provincial or municipal government, by provincial government to national and municipal government, or by municipal government to national and provincial? Can we get an idea of what these amounts are? How big is this problem? What the prospect of having a set-off operating in those instances as well? Because surely that would solve a lot of bookkeeping, a lot of administrative work if we could set off one debt against another.
Thank you, Honourable
Member. May I just finish also?
You do not come back again, so this is... Thank you.
Either way, sir, I'll leave it there if you say, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Isaac.
Thank you, Jefferson. Yeah, a lot of issues have been covered by my colleague, Honourable McLaughlin. But just to interrogate the report that we just heard, slide 7. What I'd like to know there is, what is exactly the full cost pertaining to the public sector salary adjustment? Because I heard you say very clearly that this is not the full cost. So I'd like to just get to the bottom of what would be the full cost so we understand the dynamics going forward. On slide number, the slide below that, which I assume is slide number 8, yes. Honourable McLaughlin alluded to the Donnell issue. I just wanted to ask, where do we draw the line here? Or is it just going to keep on coming back to bite us next February, next year, September, October again? Is it ongoing? Where do we draw the line here? Because it seems to be bleeding us. On slide number 9, my question there is, what would the impact be if this was scrapped? If this 301 million rand expense regarding the e-toll scenario, what would be the impact if we just scrapped it and did not provide for it? Due to what we just heard the last 2 days. Then, on slide number 14, my colleague alluded to that, so I'll just skip that one for now. And then slide number 15, Employment Creation Facilitation Fund, 264 million. Why don't we just move that to education? Slide number 15. Okay, and that's just like it's a whole very quick for us. And then finally, this was alluded to again. Then there's this comment here which was somewhat very interesting. It says that the reduced 2015-16 transfers should not be problematic. But what is concerning is the fact that grant transfers amounting to 510.6 million was not spent in 2014-15, which implies, of course, that service delivery did not take place or was postponed. Predominantly in critical sectors such as education, health, and transport infrastructure. Now this is a huge matter for concern, and how exactly are we addressing this in this medium term period?
budget.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Shop, yeah?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to appreciate the presentation by Treasury. You have given us something to work on as the Standing Committee on Appropriation. I think last week we spent a whole week on a workshop where we were told exactly what to do. We've got powers in our hands. We should apply them. And we are very lucky in this fifth parliament that we do have the Money Bills and Related Matters Amendment Act, which actually empowers us to do what members of parliament should do in the light of the situation in which we find ourselves, the international economic crisis and the situation of the students' demand for no fee. All these things, I think we have got powers in our hands. What we need to do is to have a meeting with our advisors, the FSCs, the Parliamentary Budget Office, and actually scrutinize your input. And we may need to call you again, but we think we've got sufficient power as members of Parliament to deal with the present situation. I think this Parliament is equal to the task. I would also like to say that, you know, for a very long time I have listened to input of members of Parliament. By the way, I was in the legislature since 1994. We like, as members of Parliament, to exonerate ourselves from whatever goes wrong. The Constitution is very clear. There are three arms of government: the judiciary, the executive, and ourselves. And we've got specific duties. That is making the law, that is oversight, that is public participation. As far as I'm concerned, I think government has been doing its job. But have we been doing our oversight in the manner in which we are required to do? Because I think if we have been doing that, we wouldn't have a situation of this nation. We must stop blaming government. We must blame ourselves. Where we fast asleep throughout the years. All the parties that are in Parliament, we're here. We have seen this thing coming. What have we done? So we must go back, study this report as a matter of agency. Get the advice that we need to get and exercise our powers. We've got them. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Honorable Honana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join those who have welcomed the report. Chairperson, I want to support those honorable members who have already spoken about the higher education issue. Really, it is a crisis that needs to be attended to. I fully agree that we need to have a meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education so that we are on the same path with regards to the challenges that are there in that department. I remember Chairperson earlier this year when the Minister of Higher Education presented a report to us as this committee on the Standing Committee, where he indicated that really there are shortfalls in the department, and we agree that we will take up this matter with the Department of Treasury. Chairperson, I think not only the universities that are in crisis, sooner or later will be seeing TVET also starting training them. So we need to address this matter as soon as possible. Chairperson, coming back to the report, I have some questions that I would like to begin by this. The first one is with regards to the health issues. One is the hospital revitalization grant that is now going to be changed from indirect grant to a direct grant. What I wanted to find out, what is the rationale behind this restructuring? The second issue is with regards to the HIV and AIDS Life Skills Grant, where we are indicating that there will be a reduction of 7.4 million, which is declared as a savings. What I wanted to find out, what are the consequences with regards to this mishap, because HIV and AIDS seems to be still a problem in South Africa. The last issue is with regards to the provinces that are underspending. Which one are the most provinces which are going to surrender more money back? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Manana. Honorable Ngata.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. There are two points really that I thought is important to comment on, particularly coming from the Eastern Cape, which is by and large a rural province. And the Honourable Minister, when he tabled the budget, he mentioned the progress around the provisioning of water, which goes about 70%. And here today, and Honourable Maklaka talks about unacceptable fact that 10,000 people are depending on one tap. It's important to underline the point that you know, where we come from as a country, millions of people were drinking animals. So some of the comments, I regard them as insensitive, not recognizing the progress that has been made. And therefore, I thought it's important that the comment that must not be left unattended. And as much as we need you know, to ensure that there's more people get water, but where we come from, millions were without water or drinking animals. And therefore, people cannot just make such comments. And the other point that I want to make, the whole issue of Nelson Mandela and housing. For us, this intervention is quite very critical, because the levels of urbanization throughout the world and the development path underway with the development zones, UHA, and many developments in Nelson Mandela. Many people in the rural areas, they go and flock to Nelson Mandela region, which leads to these challenges of housing, and therefore the intervention is appropriate. And the difference is that with us, we don't treat those people as refugees. They are South Africans and citizens. And therefore, their intervention for housing is quite critical for us as province. Yes.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I have noted the following members, Honourable Terrell Lange and Honourable Delisha, Honorable Mutash B and Honorable Lewis. Okay. Thank you. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also start by thanking Treasury for coming here. Mine is just to get something, a bit of clarity that I'm looking for. Referring to slide 10.1, you know, I've noticed there that there is, you know, quite a bit of unspent funding. And I'm referring specifically to public work and basic education. Now, the question is, you know, if you go to education, underspend quite a substantial amount with infrastructure grant, and the same applies to public works as far as public works is concerned. My question is, Honorable Chairperson, can clearly maybe indicate to us what the problem is? Is it incapacity on the you know, the different department side or what? Being capital works related obviously means that will also create quite a bit of jobs And I was just wondering, you know, whether that's the case and what are we doing to rectify that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Can we have Honorable Alicia?
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
My issue is simply to seek guidance from Treasury with regard to it being so strict to municipalities who do not honor their financial obligations, particularly to ESCOM and Water Pomos, and it cannot do the same with provincial and the national departments who own municipalities quite a lot of money. And that's my issue. I have a problem with that. But the minister also alluded to some recalcitrant municipalities who initially had agreed to honor, and as soon as the monies are actually released to them, change, and no longer are now defaulting insofar as the water board and ESCOM are concerned, would have a concomitant impact on service delivery and the people that are supposed to serve. If I may have advice also, Chair, without belaboring the point, with regards to the so-called crisis, and I'm saying so-called crisis in higher education, I think we are beginning to become a reactionary parliament and a reactionary government, in the sense that we now seek to provide piecemeal solutions to complex problems. Suppose another sector of interest group were to erupt tomorrow. Would you then come back to Parliament and say that finance should appropriate it in fund? And I'm not being insensitive to the plight of students. I have been a student leader myself, but I think we need a dialogue with all stakeholders. We need solutions that are long-lasting. For me, to rush towards appropriating funds, and I'm not saying or agitating for non-appropriation in the ensuing financial year, but to rush to that as the solution to the problems of students, for me, it's not a solution. There are a whole range of issues that students and institutions of higher learning are facing, particularly issues relating to transformation of those institutions, issues relating to possibilities of Parliament looking at amendment of the statutes that establish those particular universities, issues relating to power vested in those university councils, and so on and so forth. We can go on and on insofar as those matters. My take would be, yes, look at possibilities of dealing with the situation in terms of appropriating some funding, but have discourse in the country together with all stakeholders, students involved in that, with the community organization and all stakeholders, so that you find lasting solutions to this. And I think the approach should be to seek immediate, medium-term, as well as long-term solutions to this issue. Otherwise, you would appropriate funds here, and I can assure you, come March, you will still have some problems coming from that side. And I'm just cautioning that you should not create a precedent that we would not in the future be able to actually deal with, because we would have reacted to a student to involve or protest in a particular manner and in a very mechanical manner, and not having looked at the problem in a comprehensive manner. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Mutashuki.
No, Chair. No, thanks for giving me the opportunity to also air my view on the presentation that we have received this morning. I resorted to keeping quiet and not participate because quite a number of honorable members have really represented my thinking, especially when the last speaker now.
You're covered.
Thank you. Before me, I'm not covered. I need. However, Chair, I think it is important that certain things be put in a proper context. While I agree that the issue of higher education in this country is quite a problem as presented today, I must say my view and put it on record that today we are a multi-party democracy. Tomorrow it is the ruling party, and we are able to win figures and see government as well. The thing that government has failed, I think must be corrected and put in the proper context. Prior to 1994, just briefly before I get into the document, we never had so many students who are assisted through the scheme that was introduced after 1994 to aid students. And we never had the number of graduates that we have today. And it was through the initiative of the ruling party. And it should be on record. We acknowledge, therefore, that the 40,000 that this institution, the government is providing to needy students is not enough. That there must be scenarios, as Honorable Gutierrez has proposed, that are looked into. But in a particular way, to be biased with the needy students who are really in need of the funds. And my take is that we don't have to leave it open-ended to say as soon as possible. Because as soon as possible, to other people, maybe next year, and the situation may exacerbate. We need to attach time frame, though I am not able to do that at the moment. And we should tell South Africans that we sympathize with students who are faced in this crisis, and we support their struggle to achieve what they want. But it must be put in a proper context that the issue of autonomy versus intervention is also critically a problem in these institutions of higher learning. That because of this autonomy, it is not the ANC-led government that has increased the fees. It must be on record that the ANC-led government has not increased the fees, but the university cartels have increased the fees. And it is high time that the South African society be given the correct information in terms of payment that is being given to this vice-chancellor, and that be exposed to the public as our salaries are exposed. To know exactly where these funds are getting to. And why are we really, as a ruling party, taking this matter very serious? Now, we should not be opportunistic and people are talking about this sensitive matter and begin to say government is failing and all that, and you are part of government. And I'm not sure if you say government, is it in exclusion of yourself? Because we are all in government. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, okay, I noted the Honorable Eunice, okay, thanks. You may come back after, immediately after her, Honorable Member, thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. One member has already asked one of my questions, the issue of DNL, and then I'll go to my second question. On the issue of shifting of funds, from cost containment measures, how do you distinguish between the shift from under expenditure vis-a-vis the shift from cost containment measures? I mean, how can we prove that this is a real cost containment measure? Thanks.
Well, indeed. Thank you very much, Honorable Eunice. Honorable Parker.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Jefferson, I was reserving my comment until we have dealt with some of the substantive issues. Mine is on the public participation that I think is quite crucial for this time around. I've been told that we need to conclude on our negotiating mandate on this particular bill by the 13th. And we provinces are only going to get the briefings on the 12th, and then the 13th, I'm told we should be done with the, or be submitting our negotiating mandate. Jefferson, I just feel that in light of the current atmosphere in our country, we should expand on our public participation as it relates to the financial state of our country. And I would really want to propose that the committee should consider to change or do something about time. Give provinces sufficient time for us to go out and consult with our communities. It's important that our people know why we are in the current financial situation in the country, and why we need to make certain decisions in terms of allocating funds to particular bridges. My commission chair would then be that we urgently consider for us to change the date allocated to us in provinces, and that we give sufficient time for public participation on this call. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member. I think that in principle we already have suggested, so it will be taken into consideration to give sufficient time for consultation. But rather, do we still have members who want to raise on the two bills? I think dominant issue on education, we agree that there's an agency to deal with this matter, to understand the deeper context, the challenges that are facing higher education, and how the country fiscal responds in addressing those issues. So a couple of issues that has been addressed that will take into consideration in formulating our program of action. Members are aware that from next week, there are sessions that we're dealing with Budget Office and with Finance Fiscal Commission, given opportunity to provide their analysis of the MTVPS. And so that also will add some of the issues that will be of interest to the committee until we have a public hearing session with stakeholders. So the process does allow full engagement until the committee will make final decisions on issues that they will want to recommend changes, areas that changes must take place. Now, allow me to give Treasury to respond. Let's allow Treasury to respond to those matters that have been raised. Thanks very much, Division.
Thank you, Jack. I will try to respond. My team will assist me to pick up in some of the questions, so I'll kick off. Let me pick up on the issue that Honorable Chow raised on the higher education challenge that was echoed by a number of members. I must indicate that the challenge of funding that is being highlighted now of higher education is not an adjustment budget issue, because we are talking about increases in the next year. So it is really a 2016 budget issue which should be debated as part of debating the fiscal framework for 2016 that was tabled. So it may not be the issue of changing the 2015-16 budget appropriation or division of the renewable in any way. So I thought that perhaps would be important. However, it is important, therefore, as part of debating on the fiscal framework for 2016 as tabled by the minister in the MTPS, that as it has been said, that members would have an opportunity to engage in however way the members would like to engage the higher education committees and department, and I believe that at the government level also there are already processes of engaging on how actually to respond. So somehow those engagements would happen, but it would be in the context of the 2016 fiscal framework. So whatever recommendations therefore would come into influencing the budget that will be tabled in February next year, which I think part of the debate and engagement is about being able to influence that. So I hope that would clarify just the issue of adjustment budget versus the 2016 budget. So the issue of the issue of the rollover, I think the Honourable Kaka asked about whether we approve or we decline the rollovers that have been approved by provincial treasurers. There are two aspects of the rollovers from the provincial treasurers. The provincial treasurers approve the rollovers that relate to the allocation from their equitable share. But with regards to the allocation that relates to conditional grants, they don't approve the rollovers. So what they do have to do, which is done by the departments, is to make a case of the rollovers. And that case actually says that the department has got capacity to spend that money that was underspent, that they have the capacity to spend that money, and that is based on the fact that there is a project, there is a commitment, there is a contract commitment, but also that shows that in terms of the allocation for the current year, there is a full, you know, capacity to spend all that money. So I think when we look at, when we looked at rollovers in the current year, we were also mindful of the impact of that rollover on the capacity to spend the current allocation. So we look at not only that you have got a commitment, but that actually you have got a plan to actually utilize the money if that are related to that grant. So those that were not approved were actually saying either you don't have a commitment as it has been defined, or actually you actually do have enough money to cover that commitment on the current budget, plus to be able to meet your plans for the current year budget. So I think it's really a way of saying that there is planning, and if we realize that it isn't enough planning that has been done, it is actually prudent for us not to go and borrow money that actually will not be underspent. So I think that is the whole idea around the issue of underspending. So with regards to NND, I think I will leave the nail issue for you to comment on that. Okay. With the issue of NND allocations and additions, and I think it's something that relates to all the shifts that we have seen in the grants, because it is not only in the NND that we have shifted money. We have shifted money from revitalization, you know, from national to other provinces that are able to spend money. So the whole idea is about saying where the spending is occurring and there's underspending elsewhere, the money would have to shift. So in this case, the Eastern Cape province, which in the previous years was not the best performing province in the human settlement, and they even lost some money in the previous 2 years to other provinces. Now the province seems to be performing, and there is pressure now in terms of where they are with their plans, and this is basically adding money to their human settlement development grant to be able to address those pressures. So it so happens that those pressures are also very much evident in the performance that is there in the Nelson Mandela Bay. So this has nothing to do anything else other than to say the money will shift in response to where there is performance. So if there is no performance overall, then the money will actually be declared as underspending, like it has happened with regards to the water, the regional water grant. So and that regional water grant is not necessarily the grant that is meant for the metros. As you remember that the metros in terms of the bulk infrastructure are funded through what we call urban settlement development grant. So that regional grant really focusing on the municipalities outside of the metro largely, that will connect the bulk that has got a regional aspect to it in terms of cross boundaries between municipalities. So, and I think that one of the reasons why we ended up having this scenario that we don't actually like that much of having the indirect grants, because they actually do not better, you know, facilitate the function of the intergovernmental systems, because it means that we are actually taking over what should be the functions of the lower government levels or of other spheres of government like province and local government. But I think the reason that was announced was a short-term measure that was responding to the lack of capacity that the government was saying is evident in some of the provinces and local government. And I think it's this committee that has said that that measure should not be a long term. We must work towards maintaining the functioning of the intergovernmental system. That says each sphere of government needs to perform its functions in the way that has been assigned. But part of the indirect grant is really about supporting capacity. You know, so one of the conditions from this committee was to say that each one of these departments
must make sure that they support the building of capacity of those municipalities and provinces on whose behalf they're implementing the programs in the short term. So the Department of Water Affairs has done quite a bit, I believe, in supporting some of the municipalities to develop their capacity. So hence, you will see that part of this additional grant has been allocated directly to the municipalities. And you will see even in the new 2016, there are some shifting of the money towards municipalities that now are seen to have capacity to deliver, so that the money is converted into indirect grants. So it does not mean into direct. It does not mean that the whole indirect grant is crept, but But it's just to say that for a portion of it will go to those municipalities that would otherwise have been assisted through implementation by national government. So that is what is happening here with regards to your revitalization, where Limpopo and Free State now are performing very well in terms of their revitalization programs, and they have capacity to spend in terms of the current programs. And then the NHI also with regards to Western Cape, that is performing with regards to that. So I think that is really the issue around where there is capacity, let them move. Where there is no capacity, let us shift the money between the provinces, between the municipalities, but let us support the building of that capacity in the process. I think that is really the strategy that we try to put in place. And I don't think from where we see the treasury, there is any more, you know, than what we can do, and to make sure that the rest of the government also takes capability for performance for the function that they have been funded, that they motivate very hard for to get money for. Okay, you answer the debt issue. What is the full cost of the wage increase? I think in the current year, it's 12 billion. It is 12 billion that was added due to the settlement, the wage settlement that was achieved. So the current year is 12 billion. And we have been able to fund 5 billion from the contingency fund. And so which means that both national and provincial departments have got to find money within their budget to make up for that shortfall. And that is what the provinces are doing. So most of the additions to this 3.8 billion has got the provinces, so they've got to find between the nine provinces have got to find about 4 billion to make up for that wage increase. So the e-hall, if the e-hall is scrapped, what it means is that the amount that has cost us to build the road, which I understand it could be around 25 billion around that area, it would mean that money would have to come somewhere. So I think that is why with the settlement agreement that we reached with Gauteng to reduce the rates charged on the e-toll system, that national government and the province have got to make up the money. Because if not collected in e-toll, it means there's got to come on budget, basically. And what it means that now is a trade-off now, obviously, between the higher education challenge and the e-toll challenge. So I think it becomes a DMP challenge. So I think that basically would be the consequences of us saying, let's grab the e-toll completely. Exactly. So I think I think what you said on the employment facilitation fund. Okay, you will respond to that. So the underspending of the 5 million, of course I've already responded to the whole issue of underspending, you know, that if they're not able to shift to any other projects that are performing, then other than to then for them to just waste the money, we think it's better to understand. But the whole idea is to say in the coming year, perform better, learn and perform better in the coming year. So do you want to comment on anything else?
So I think possibly what is prudent to do is just to start again by stating the obvious advantage, to say that when we deal with the in-year, not to say I think that there aren't degrees of flexibility for this committee to consider, but the degrees of flexibility are so much less given the short time period and given that departments are busy with their current operations. So, and given also that in terms of the law, this is tabled as a as technical amendments to budgets. I think it's quite a different animal from saying, well, for your 3 years forward, looking forward, how do you change government priorities? So I think that is what Marie Jane was alluding to when she was saying it's not predominantly a problem for India. And I think, obviously, the committees, I'm sure, will apply their minds as to what could be possible, perhaps, in year, but obviously not throwing out the baby with the bathwater. It is complicated with some of these issues as you look at what department's plans are and what they actually delivering against it. So I think that's just a broad point. With regards to Danelle, I am not the most learned person on that in the Treasury, but what I do know is that we had that contract, which you correctly stated, we do no longer have, and in fact we paid penalty fees to pay ourselves out of that contract initially. But there were also offset contracts, whereby we had other contracts with Danelle, and we agreed that as South Africa we would manufacture, Danelle would manufacture wing fuselages and it's quite technical, but certain components of the wings, of the aircraft, obviously. And there's an indemnity of 1.6 billion, a guarantee that we have given. So essentially, to the extent that we do not deliver whatever component is we're meant to deliver at a certain time period, then in terms of that contract, the penalty fee is due. Obviously, the Danelle have that audited, and we're not prepared to pay 1.6 upfront. So we're saying, at the time and point that we default, in terms of the project timelines, and as such time that Danelle has come, so that is a correct, that amount correctly reflects the costs of that default, then they may only bring it. I think we didn't want to budget for it because we don't know we're uncertain about the amount until it's actually presented. So in that sense, I think it becomes a little bit unforeseeable and it is obviously unavoidable. But you are correct, it's not completely unforeseeable. Essentially, I think in terms of that, we're quite close to the 1.6, I think it's about 1.3 that we've already paid in guarantees. Then in terms of the slides on the declared savings, I think Marie Jane to speak to some of those areas at length, and also explaining that the savings were made here, often they were diverted to other grants or to other provinces, and so on. I think the problem with the declared savings poses, obviously there's a whole issue that was raised about the value for money, and that ship delivery is affected against this, and what does that mean for that? But on the other hand, if departments are indicating that they will not be in a position to spend this money, then that is the reason why this is on the declared savings list. I think in terms of what the reasons are for that, it varies depending on which program you're talking about. And certainly, I think, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation and the Treasury have started increasingly taken up and doing evaluations, obviously in cooperation with departments, but I'm sure that in portfolio committees, departments would be asked about these programs. So essentially, I think theoretically, we could say you could take all the money of the declared savings, but then you would not be able to approve what has been presented, or you could do a mix of that. So I think one can apply one's mind, but essentially, given that they want to spend the money, I think the money must be taken. In terms of, as I said, in terms of where we're proposing money goes towards, in any case, that's a technical adjustment governed by the PFA Section 32. So some of them are no-brainers,
Others also have financial consequences, like, for example, in the e-tolls, that again correctly point out that obviously it's a debt that we have to pay. But the consequences are even larger in the sense that if SANRAL, you know, does not honor its debts and so on, its status as a borrower will, its rating will deteriorate substantially. And then the interest rate costs on the same amount of money borrowed go up. I mean, if one considers on the slide 19, on slide 19, and you look at the end of the day, just for this year, 128 billion is being paid as debt service costs, and then you're not even paying the debt back. So this is the problem with the deficit, you see. But the point I think I was trying to make is that with regard to the e-tolls and how you would affect SANRAL's balance sheet, it would affect others. The same with regards to entities, all other entities and so on as well. So it does get a bit complicated, but that doesn't mean that all matters cannot be considered and unpacked, obviously. There was also a question about cost containment versus whether things, I think the members might hear. But let me answer it nonetheless. The key savings is where departments have actually said you can reduce our appropriation by this amount, and the money will then be reduced from the ACE line. In the case of the shifts, where there are cost containments, we can see that the money comes from that line, because on the main budget, the money would have been for business services of various categories. So we do obviously double check that if there is cost containment, that it actually came from those lines. They've reduced those lines and has put the money to another purpose. And I think that it goes to what Minister was saying about when you have new priorities and you don't have lots of money, then some of your old priorities can no longer be a priority. So cost containment is one thing, but in other cases, one might really have to look at which programs, you know, really are the key priorities.
Chairperson, let me then add, Stephen, if I can ask you to show us slide 19 on the screen. And my advice to the members is when you look at slides 15, 16, 17, and 18, Chair, on the face value of that declared unspent funds, it looks like 3.2 billion rand. So on the face value, it looks like a lot of money. But technically, you should compare this number to the main appropriation. So if you look at the national appropriation, there's 679.4 billion. So 2.3 billion as a percentage of that number is what we're talking about. So when the members discuss this individually, also take that into consideration of the department's overall budget. In some cases, you may conclude that it's significant. In most cases, I'm saying it's almost insignificant. But that's something that the members may want to consider as you deliberate the detail. Chairman, the second one, slide 26, where the provinces, the 510 million has been highlighted. If I can just ask you to take that number, and then again, Stephen shows slide 19, of the provinces' equitable share, and this is not the whole budget, but 510 million as a percentage of 382 billion, Chair, in my opinion, is beyond insignificance. But it's still not good enough in the sense that service delivery has not been delivered. But proportionately, it may appear like a big amount, but in the context of the overall budget, it's not big in that sense. I think when members debate, just bear that in mind. Chief, there was a question on the interest part of the 510 million. Now, in the 2004 and 2005 Division of Revenue Act, we had the interest as a calculation. But Chairperson, it became an absolute nightmare for us to calculate who must owe who money. And therefore, the administrative burden was not warranted, and therefore we've taken it out. So it is a factor, but it's more drama to manage the administrative burden associated, and therefore we've removed, with your permission as this House, that clause that was in the door around interest calculation. Chair, then there was questions about the
the progress with regard to the Eskom and water board debt. I think the minister has indicated that this matter was taken to cabinet on the 12th of August. The minister then wrote to the nationalists in person, and in my opinion has put them on notice with regard to the payments to municipalities. So there was a letter sent out on the 13th of August to all the national ministers, I am the Minister of Finance. The Director General wrote himself to all the national departments on the 21st of July, and the Accountant General wrote to provinces. Now, Chair, the question was, what is the overall amount that national government owe provinces, and the same with to municipalities? So, as at the end of March, national government in totality owed municipalities 1.9 billion rand. It's with pleasure that I have to announce to this House that number is reduced by the 15th of August with 170 million rand. It's now 1.7 billion rand. With regard to provinces, the number at the end of March was 2.8 billion rand, and Chair, that has now been reduced by 360 million to just above 2.5 billion. So gradually, Chair, we are making inroads, and it's not an empty threat anymore. It seems that I think the pressures are helping us to get the behavior changes that this committee wanted us to initiate in the first stance. Perhaps, Chair, I think that's the only contributions I have at this point. Oh, as far as the municipalities that is not honored, Chairperson, unfortunate, there's 27 of them, and those ones we have written letters about a week ago that we have now invited them to tell us why we should not continue with invoking Section 2162 of the Constitution. We've also persuaded Selga to meet with these municipalities on its own. And that will happen on the 26th of October. Because so far, I've met in person, Chair, with 52 of the 50 non-municipalities. So we've almost done going through that process. And we have submitted to this House a preliminary report on the 17th of September to flag what was the lessons learned, what's all the policy challenges that we have to deal with, and also in a detailed report per municipality. I'm not sure, Chair, if it was received, but we can certainly just share a list of the municipalities with the Secretariat, Chair. Thanks.
Just to add on this issue of municipal debt, I think what was important for us is really to start getting the culture of payment, you know, going to these municipalities that were clearly not honoring their debt at all, because some of them were not. I mean, you could see the debt every year since 2010 just spiraling. And these municipalities that are owing are not necessarily the worst off compared to the rest of the 208 municipalities that are paying their debt. You know, so there are challenges that their culture, also debt management, not actually optimizing on their revenue potential, the huge losses of non-revenue water and electricity. So I think that sort of kind of indicated some of the challenges that we are working through some of the municipalities. But I think the big thing for us was to get the culture right. And I think that is why when you see the amount going down for provinces and national government, what it means is that it is the bills also, the new bills that are paid. So those municipalities who are defaulting now, some of them are not even paying the new bills. So it means that the historical debt, plus they're not paying those new, and those are concerned municipalities. And we are hoping that you will support us, that we take also have an action on them, because there has to be a culture of payment. Either way, even in the consumer side, there has to be that culture of payment, which is a major challenge. I think when it comes to the debts owed between municipalities, because when the provinces now are looking at deeply in terms of these numbers, but one of the major issues also is their bills also. Sometimes they are not very accurate.
So now that some of the provinces and the public works also did also start a detailed audit, you know, verifying and reconciling the bills. So that work has been done. But what they found is that some of these municipalities also, because they are also agents of provinces in the collection of licensing fees, so some of them are owing, you see. So then when you compare what the province is owing the municipalities and what they owe in the license fees, it almost cancels each other. So I think that is the issue now that also is being worked through in the system to try to resolve this complex problem. But with the problem that I think we need to get the culture of payment of the debt for what they are doing or happening in this municipality that seem to be not wanting to do that.
No, thanks so much, TDG, for the responses. Honorable members, I just want to check with you whether there are quick issues that you think you are looking to follow up. Honorable Shal, Honorable Fick, thanks, Honorable Members.
Chairperson, it's not a follow-up. We are all deployed in a geographic area that's a municipal area. And it's our responsibility to engage that municipality and the mayor and the MM, what are you being owed by departments, and to follow that up immediately by way of a phone call to the relevant MEC and the email. That is our responsibility as well. I don't see Salga here this morning. I think in future Salga must be part of this meeting. The other point is, Chairperson, it's crucial that we, on a quarterly basis, engage with the provinces on their infrastructure spending and this Lego Material Appropriations, engage with KZN and Limpopo. And it was extremely crucial, if you look again in what is in the amendments to the Division of Revenue. Well, Chairperson, referring to the district municipality of Mkanyakude in the northern part of KZN. It's very dry and we allocated 8 million rand additional. That's good. That's a good story for them because it's very dry there. The other point is, Chairperson, the building of capacities in provincial departments, specific treasuries and COCTA in provincial departments. And I think this is where the Department of Public Administration must also come in. Which post can be combined to get a more effective performance? Referring to what the Honourable Minister for Finance said in the MTPBS statement. Monitoring and evaluation in provinces is located in the office of the premiers. We will have to engage with the director generals of provinces because that is the head of their administration in the province and maybe also the premiers. But that function will have to filter down in the province to all the regions because you can't remote control Springbok from Kimberley. It's 804 kilometers. We have to go and drive there and see what's happening. And that's where we come here as public representatives. I think a model in human settlement development, Chairperson, and we were there, is in Durban. I hope I pronounce it correctly, the Kunubi Housing Development. It's actually a town that's been created and established there. And that is a model where this government has to complement it, giving people dignity in the type of housing that is being erected there. And lastly, Chair, that we take those documents to our constituencies and go and explain it. As a supplement to public hearings that's going to be held in each province during the NZOP processing of the amendments to the Division of Revenue Bill. In terms of the rules of the NCP. But we take this to our constituents and explain it to the Chamber of Commerce in Kimberley, wherever you come from, that I understand the complexities of the economy, and that people must pay their taxes, that we can get revenue to divide the revenue. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable Fix. Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just to, sorry, I'm not misunderstood for clarification. While we understand that the current situation is that we might not be able to utilize funds in the current appropriations bill, that is why we're saying is that the process must start now so that we can arrive at a solution. That is why. We can't sit and say, okay, it can't be understood. We can't do that. That's the one. And then, just also in response, and I'm not wanting to start a debate, I understand that it's not only the stage one that we're looking for a solution. We're going to have to look at what we're going to include and incorporate in the following budget in the years to come. So I'm not saying, turn out the money now and that's full stop. So I just wanted to clarify that. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Fee. These are not questions to raise. Now, this is a function of the chair, and I will have to summarize the and conclude the meeting. Treasurer, do you want to, I don't want to respond because these are issues of enforcement that are raised, I think, by members. Honorable Jobert, Sito.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say that I don't believe there's nothing we can do. I believe we can do something as this committee. We are lawmakers, that is our mandate. And we need to be able to deal with the situations of the country as they arrive. But I also want us to invite the heads of universities when we talk about these things. Because it seems, you know, they have demanded, they have increased the fees, the pot is boiling, and they've kept their heads in the sand, and they are appearing nowhere. I would like us to invite them to have a cup of tea with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Professor. I think this concludes the deliberations on the two bills, the adjustment appropriation bill and the division of revenue bill. And as Honorable Members has proposed, that as the process unfolds, we really deepen our understanding on the proposed framework. And so, clarify areas which we want changes to take place. So, Honorable Members, from next week, there are two sessions that will convene, which will provide us an opportunity to have post-MTVPS analysis by FSC and the Budget Office. And I believe that they will factor in some of the issues that are emerging from this meeting so that we really go deeper in clarifying issues that we want the appropriation committee to conclude on. Deliberations have been noted, the question reaching what would be the content of our program as we move forward. So thanks very much for honoring this engagement and for clarifying issues that are proposed in the MTVPS and what the minister has tabled, Treasurer. So thanks, the meeting's adjourned.